ధ్యాన విజ్ఞాన జగ్ఞేన మమ్మిస్వాత్మన మహాత్మని శారద జగ్య పృథిమం వై సంశిరి మున్నయాగమం. Jnana, of Vedic knowledge. Vijnana, and spiritual enlightenment. Jagyena, by the sacrifice. Mam, me. Istva, having worshipped. Atmanam, the Supreme Lord within everyone's heart. Atmani, within themselves. Sarva, of all. Jagya, sacrifices. Patim, the Lord. Mam, me. Vai, certainly. Samsirim, the Supreme Perfection. Munaya, the sages. Agaman, achieved. Translation. Formerly, great sages, through the sacrifice of Vedic knowledge and spiritual enlightenment, worship me within themselves, knowing me to be the Supreme Lord of all sacrifice and the Supersoul in everyone's heart. Thus coming to me, these sages achieve the Supreme Perfection. Text number 7. Vai Uddha Vastayati Yastri Vidho Vikkarok Vayantarapati Nadya Pavargayo Yat Tan Madhya Shayat At Amitavata Shakim Shu Adyantayo Yadasato Sti Taddeva Madhye. My dear Uddhava, the material body and mind composed of the three modes of material nature attach themselves to you, but they are actually illusion, since they appear only at the present, having no original or ultimate existence. How is it possible, therefore, that the various stages of the body, namely birth, growth, reproduction, maintenance, and dwindling and death, can have any relation to your eternal self? These phases relate only to the material body, which previously did not exist and ultimately will not exist. The body exists merely at the present moment. Purport. The example is given that a man walking in the forest may see a rope, but consider it to be a snake. Such perception is maya or illusion. Although the rope actually exists and the snake also exists in another place. Illusion thus refers to the false identification of one object with another. The material body exists briefly and then disappears. In the past, the body did not exist, and in the future it will not exist. It enjoys a flickering, momentary existence in so-called present time. If we falsely identify ourselves as the material body or mind, we are creating an illusion. One who identifies himself as American, Russian, Chinese, Mexican, black or white, man or woman, communist or capitalist, and so on, accepting such designations as his permanent identity is certainly in deep illusion. He can be compared to a sleeping man who sees himself acting in a different body while dreaming. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna told Uddhava that spiritual knowledge is the means of achieving the highest perfection. And now the Lord is explicitly describing such knowledge. So these couple of verses here, Krishna summarizes the knowledge that he has been speaking to Uddhava in this section of the 19th chapter. And the next verse, of course, Uddhava asks for some further information about the process of devotional service. So these verses are summary verses of Krishna's instructions. So, one may ask the question that who has perfect Vedic knowledge and is able to apply that knowledge perfectly? That's the question. And according to that question, Krishna is giving this answer in verse number 6, that those who have gained jnana or Vedic knowledge and who practically apply that knowledge, having realized that knowledge, they are the ones with perfect knowledge and application, and the result is that they therefore attain the supreme perfection of attaining the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who does not have perfect knowledge and ability to practically apply that perfect Vedic knowledge, although they may have some knowledge, they do not attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ultimately, those who do not attain the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead remain within the material world. So, there is a distinction here. Krishna is using the words jnana and vijnana. So jnana, in this sense, refers to the knowledge we receive from the Vedas, knowledge which is consistent with Vedic knowledge that may be received through other scriptures, that gives us an understanding that we are different from the material elements. That is knowledge, that we are a spirit soul, spiritual by nature, Brahman, aham brahmasmi, and that we can identify that of all the different material elements, we are different from that. We are an eternal conscious spiritual entity, Brahman, and all the different material elements have a different quality, a temporary nature, which is manifested under the duration of time, instigating a mixture of the three modes of material nature. Vijnana means that one can see oneself, one's own spiritual self, and all the material elements in relationship with the super soul or the Supreme Lord. That vijnana means that one knows how to properly apply that knowledge in relationship with the Supreme Lord, who is the ultimate cause of all causes. So one who has that knowledge and is able to practically utilize that knowledge, they can attain the supreme perfection or the supreme goal of the Personality of Godhead. So then, in the next verse, text number 7, Krishna gives some a little bit more explicit information about transcendental knowledge. And Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Thank you. In the next verse, in verse number 7, Krishna gives doesn't affect me as much as I know I can see everyone else is completely distracted. I can just go on, but no one will be listening. That's it. So, Varuni, you have to be quiet. Thank you. Or you have to be quiet. Okay, thank you. So, in verse 7, Krishna gives more explicit knowledge about the difference between matter and spirit and how that should be practically applied, in the sense that the emphasis on the next verse is that Krishna is telling Uddhava that seeing the difference, the temporary nature of the material body and the illusory nature of the material body, one should not focus one's attention on that, but should try to focus one's attention on the nature of the eternal self, which is different from the material body. So just describing that in a little bit more detail. So he gives some examples. The example Krishna gives is that actually the examples given in the purport have been given by Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that if one sees, this is the nature of illusion. If we're walking in the forest and we see a piece of rope, and we think, when we look at that, we think, oh, that's a snake. Then immediately we become fearful, thinking, oh, there's a snake there. So the illusion is that we're seeing one thing but thinking it is another. So similarly, when we see the material body and we're thinking it is ourself, so we're seeing one thing but thinking it's something else than what it is. So if we see the material body, we think, oh, that is me. But that's illusion, because it's something else. In the example, then there's another example given by the Acharyas, that if a person is sleeping, and while sleeping they dream that there's someone else. Anyone had that experience? You're sleeping and you've dreamt that you are actually a different person. So, in that sense, again, you know, one is identifying that temporary dream body as oneself. Again. Now, in both examples, although one is mistaking one thing for another, the examples are very nice, because what we see is that a rope and a snake, they actually exist, but in a different place. So in other words, the illusion is not that we think, oh, there's a snake, but there's no such thing as a snake. Right? The illusion is we're mistaking the rope for a snake, but there is a snake somewhere else. In the same way, we may mistake the material body as the self, realizing that the material body is not the self. We understand, but there is a self. Right? Now, the impersonalist, the mistake that many philosophers make, or so-called philosophers, is that they think, oh, the illusion is to think that we actually have a self. You know, an individual identity. So this is what Krishna is saying, that one who has knowledge they actually understand that they have a self, and that self is an eternal self that has an eternal relationship with the Absolute Truth or the Supreme Lord. The illusion, it's not that the illusion is thinking that I have a self. The illusion is mistaking the body for the self. So, we have to, first of all, the first point of knowledge, of course, is to understand the difference between matter and spirit, or the difference between the material body and the spiritual body. A madman, people who are somewhat crazy, the symptom is that they forget themselves. So you see sometimes, you know, people imagine that, you know, I am Napoleon, or, you know, I am Jesus, you know, I am the president, or I am this. A reincarnation, just like this one young singer, I forget her name. She's the latest, you know, on the charts. She got a couple of number one hits, and she thinks that she is a reincarnation of some famous personality from a previous life, and she believes that I am that person. There's no real evidence to support it, but it's just, you know, a part of her madness. So, you know, madness is to, you know, forget one's actual self and to think that one is someone else. So, if we take up Vedic knowledge and we stop identifying with the material body, that's good, but if we fail to actually identify or completely remain completely forgetful of our eternal self, we're actually still an illusion and we're in a state of madness. So, one has to stop identifying with the material body, and then one has to absorb oneself in one's eternal spiritual self. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives us a clue of how that can be done, and which is actually the real essence of what Sri Krishna is saying in these verses, that one has to replace the spirit of enjoying the material world with the spirit of serving the Supreme Lord. That is the key that allows us to enter into absorption in our own eternal self. As long as we remain with some degree of trying to enjoy, we have a spirit of enjoying the material energy, to that degree we've forgotten who we are. But the Mayavadis, of course, or the impersonalists, they try to give up that sense of enjoying the material world, but they don't take the next step of replacing it with a sense of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore that enjoying propensity, sense gratification, simply manifests in the desire to become God, and in that way to be the enjoyer on another platform, on a spiritual platform, that I have failed to enjoy the material world, so we'll give up that process, but the same mentality is there. Now I will become the enjoyer, you know, on a spiritual platform. I am God. So it's the same mood of sense gratification. So, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually at the very beginning, so you know, this is the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Krishna is summarizing this philosophy here. Sometimes it's very, very difficult for, you know, although it's, you know, common sense, but for many people it's very difficult to accept, very difficult to understand, especially in Kali Yuga. So the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada actually gives a very long introduction of the life and precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says at the beginning of that that the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam is more easily understood through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gives a practical demonstration. So here we see that you know, Krishna is explaining to Uddhava that those who have knowledge, jnana, vijnana, realized knowledge, and serve the Supreme Lord, they attain the supreme destination, the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us actually how to serve the Supreme Lord, that we should do that, how to do that, and the most easiest way that we can do that, especially in this age of Kali, and that is done by chanting the names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, eating prasadam, worshipping the deities, going out and chanting for the benefit of others, associating with devotees, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, dancing, feasting, celebrating all the Lord's pastimes with festivals. In this way, he showed us this is, if you take up this service attitude to serving the Lord by distributing the glories of his holy name, then in that practical way you are actually living the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam. And living the philosophy of Bhagavatam means that you are forgetting this absorption in the material body, and you are becoming absorbed in your eternal self as the servant of the Supreme Lord. They're very practical. So this is Lord Chaitanya's mercy. There's actually, although for those who, as we said, if one tries to forget, tries not to absorb themselves in the illusion that we are this material body, if one tries to do that but remains forgetful of the eternal self, or is disinclined to acknowledge that they are, you know, have an eternal identity as a servant of the Lord, in negating their own spiritual qualities, then they also have a tendency to negate the pastimes of the Lord and the instructions of the Lord as transcendental qualities, and they negate the Lord as being non-transcendental. So in this way, such persons may find it difficult to accept the pastimes, the instructions, and the practical demonstration of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they're making the same mistake that they apply to themselves, they will then apply to the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, all the Lord's incarnations and manifestations and pastimes. And just as they see their own eternal qualities and individuality as something material, then they apply that same conception to the Lord. And within that, there is a you know, it is based upon this enjoying spirit separately from the Lord that one becomes disinclined to follow the natural direction to take shelter of the Supreme Lord as his eternal servant. So there's actually one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text number 7. Jitatmana prasantasya paramatma samahita sitoshna sukadukeshu tatamana pramanayo. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honour and dishonour are all the same. Now, in that verse there, Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that generally we are following the dictation or the control of the material energy. And when the mind and senses are uncontrolled, that is, the mind and senses want to enjoy the material energy, then we are literally controlled by the material energy, and we are subject to the illusion of duality within the material world. So for instance, if we want to enjoy the material world, then we immediately think, oh, this is good, or this is bad. If we're trying to enjoy, oh, this is not good, this is not enjoyment, this is bad. This is enjoyment, this is good. And we distinguish. You know, all that we see everything in the dualities. In this way, we become absorbed in illusion and absorbed in the bodily concept of life and dualities, where there's no absolute truth, there's no absolute reality anywhere. Everything is relative to another, but there is no absolute position. So we're absorbed in this constant changing illusory reality. But if we control the mind and senses, then we no longer follow the dictations of the material energy. So now, controlling the mind and senses, the person is thinking that I am not inclined to enjoy the material energy. Therefore, the dualities of material existence no longer exist. One sees that, well, it's all, you know, an illusory temporary state, and it's all bad. You know, the concept that, you know, something is good, something is bad is illusory. Actually, existence in the material world means birth, death, old age and disease, and forgetfulness of our eternal, you know, happiness on the spiritual platform. So all of that's bad. There's nothing good about any of that. It's just like, you know, wet stool, dry stool. That, you know, if we see some dry stool, you know, we may step on it. We may think, you know, well, at least it's not so bad, at least it's dry stool. You step on wet stool, you know, that's really bad. So, but, you know, it's actually all stool. You know, it's all bad. There's nothing real good about dry stool. It's just not as perhaps. So, material existence is like that. There's prayers by Raghunath Das Goswami that, you know, you have. He prayed to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, you know, I offer my obeisances unto the dear Lord who saved me from the stool pit of material existence. So one may think, yeah, but some of that stool's okay. Some of it's dried up a little. Yeah, fine. Play in the stool pit. You know, it's all stool. So, you know, that sort of vision is there. Now, because of our eternal nature, when we don't follow the dictation or the control of the material energy, we then naturally follow the dictation of the Supreme, that which is controlling or above the superior force, above the material energy, and that is the Supreme Lord. One way or another, we are naturally inclined to take shelter of a superior protective force for our eternal happiness. So therefore it describes in that verse that, you know, for one whose mind and senses are controlled, the super soul is already reached. But although the super soul is reached, if that mentality of enjoying the material world is there in its subtle form, and that mentality of a lack of service to the super soul is there, then one will be disinclined to acknowledge or take up service to the super soul, even though the super soul may be easily reached at that point. Therefore, you see that Krishna in this chapter is comparing that even though many jnanis and yogis have transcendental knowledge, the key thing that he keeps pointing out which is missing is this service attitude, taking up service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If that's missing, then even though the super soul is very easily attained, they don't want it. They're disinclined. They actually want to be the super soul. They don't want to serve the super soul. They still want to, they're in that enjoying mood, and they want to be God. They want to be the super soul. And therefore, they do not actually automatically attain the super soul. So this service attitude is very important. So Krishna is explaining to Uddhava that, you know, what one should follow. Here he says in this verse, he said, formerly great sages, through the sacrifice of Vedic knowledge and spiritual enlightenment, they worship me. So if you look at the history of the Vedas, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, the Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, if you go all through those histories, what do you find is so many devotees serving the Supreme Lord and attaining perfection. So many examples. But the impersonalists, they don't see that. They're like the owl, they keep their eyes shut. And they don't want to follow that example. Although there are so many, unlimited, hundreds and thousands of examples. And Krishna is saying, you know, formerly that's what all the sages have done. And here we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says the same thing. In the fourth chapter, verse number 10, he says, Vitaraga baya krodha manmaya mamupasita bahavo gyana tapasa putta madbhava magataha. Being free from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me. And thus they all attained transcendental love for me. So again, he's saying the same thing. Not being absorbed in the antics of our little children, but being absorbed in me, taking refuge in me. Like this. So, and then later, a few verses on in text 15, again he says, Evam gyatva kitam karma purvai api mamukshubi kuru kameva tasmatvam purvai purva taram kitam. All the liberated souls in ancient times acted with this understanding of my transcendental nature. Therefore, you should perform your duty following in their footsteps. So, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, again, who is Krishna himself, showed the same example. So Krishna is saying to Uddhava that just as all the great sages and all the incarnations have shown and all the scriptures show, you just simply take up service to the Supreme Lord and you'll attain perfection. But if you avoid that service, your knowledge, even transcendental knowledge, without realization. Realization means we act upon that knowledge that we are the eternal servant of the Lord. If you don't have full realization and your knowledge, there's some transcendental knowledge, but it's incomplete, again you'll be bewildered. So Krishna says, in the middle of those verses, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, for everyone follows my path in all respects. Which means that you can either take shelter of the Supreme Lord by service, or you're still under the dictation of the material energy. Everyone follows Krishna's path. You're either under his path indirectly, under the shelter of the material energy, or you're on his path directly by transcending the material energy and engaging in the Lord's eternal service. So while we've got the Bhagavad Gita open, there's just one more verse I'd like to quote. Now this is after that verse we quoted from the sixth chapter, how one's mind and senses, when they're controlled, the super soul is automatically reached. And then Krishna says, jnana vijnana. So again he uses the same. Jnana vijnana. Chittatma kutasto vijitendriya. Yukta ichutte yogi samalastrasma kanchana. A person is said to be established in self-realization is called a yogi or mystic when he is fully satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. Such a person is situated in transcendence and is self-controlled. He sees everything, whether it be pebbles, stones or gold, as the same. So there Krishna is saying again, there must be transcendental knowledge and there must be realization, which means that one engages oneself in the service of the Lord. That's the realization of transcendental knowledge. If that's there, then one is a yogi. Otherwise, one has failed as a yogi and one has failed as a jnani. Even though one may have the label, one may be trying to be a jnani, trying to be a yogi, but actually they have failed. But when they come to that point, then they are considered a yogi, and then they're self-controlled and self-realized. Because one whose transcendental knowledge is mixed with mental speculation, then they'll be tricked by the material energy. They'll have some doubts, there'll be some, their knowledge is not powerful enough to actually free them from the influence, even very subtle influences of Maya. But one who's actually fixed in realized knowledge that I am the eternal servant of Krishna, that sort of knowledge allows them to be free from the influence of Maya and to be self-controlled. Not only one's senses, but one's mind. So the mind of a self-controlled person, they're not interested in mental speculation. Prabhupada actually gives at the very end of that purport, he says that such a person, one may consider mental speculation, some may consider mental speculation to be as good as gold, but the self-realized soul sees it to be no better than stone or pebbles. So, in summary, one needs to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a mood of service That realization of transcendental knowledge is what is needed to attain perfection. And without that service mood to the Supreme Lord, the transcendental knowledge, which is mixed with a certain amount of mental speculation that I am not the eternal servant of Krishna, that will not free one from the material energy. So the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Supersoul. By serving the devotee of the Lord, the pure devotee of the Lord, one is serving the Supersoul. And one can actually experience the reciprocation with the Supersoul. Especially when we're on a platform of being completely covered by the material energy and very inexperienced in spiritual matters, we may have some intellectual understanding of the Supersoul, of the Supreme Lord, but really we can't see him. We don't know so much. But we can see his representative, the spiritual master, and by serving the spiritual master, Sakshadharitvya Samastasastya, he is non-different from the Supreme Lord. And as one serves the spiritual master, or you know, the devotees of the Lord, and associates with the devotees of the Lord, you'll directly experience a reciprocation with both the devotee of the Lord and the Supersoul. So that is practical application. So you learn something, so let us apply it and get a result. So there's some nice pastimes with Srila Prabhupada, because you know many of the pure devotees of the Lord, how devotees perceive directly the Supersoul, the actions of the Supersoul, by reciprocating, by taking up service to the pure devotee. Once one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Giriraj, he was. It was when they were doing the cornerstone laying ceremony in Mayapur. So he went to visit Srila Prabhupada in Prabhupada's grass hut. And Srila Prabhupada started telling him that when the British were ruling India, they divided it into three states, generally Bombay, Calcutta and Madras. He said he wanted Giriraj to take up management responsibility, so he said, which one do you want? Giriraj Swami was a type of devotee that was always very keen to follow other devotees and wasn't very keen to make important decisions himself. So, he said to Srila Prabhupada that, what do you want me to do, Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you decide. So he went away and he thought about it for about a week and he couldn't come to a conclusion. He really wanted Prabhupada to make that decision. So he thought, I'll trick Prabhupada. So he went back to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was doing some writing in his desk, something. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm thinking I'll go to Bombay. And he thought, what he'll do, he'll watch Srila Prabhupada's expression, and when he sees his indication, then he'll choose that, knowing that that's what Prabhupada wants. The Prabhupada said, yes, yeah, that's good. But he, there's no expression. So he thought, all right, I'll try again. But, on the other hand, I was thinking I might go to Madras. Prabhupada again, not an expression. He said, yeah, yes, that is good. So, at this stage, Giriraj started doubting whether he was actually going to, actually trick Prabhupada. Tried one last time. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada, maybe I should stay in Calcutta. Should Papa? No experience. Yes, that is good. So, because Giriraj Swami, I don't think he was a sannyasi, I'm not sure he was a sannyasi, let's say, but he realized that there was no way that he could treat. Prabhupada was onto him as soon as he walked into that door, you know, what he's going to do. And there was no way, he actually felt quite ashamed that, you know, he tried to trick his spiritual master. But at the same time, he felt very exhilarated that, you know, he was exhilarated by perceiving that Srila Prabhupada was in such a transcendental state, beyond being tricked by, you know, any foolish disciples. He could see, you know, his connection there with the Supreme Lord, you know, was above this. There's another example with Bob Cohen. Bob Cohen, he met Srila Prabhupada in, I think it was Mayapur or Calcutta, for the first time. When he met Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada asked him who he was and if he had any questions, and Bob Cohen said, well, why not Buddhism? Like this, you know, being a bit of a wise guy. And Srila Prabhupada said, so, what is the Buddhist philosophy? And so Bob tried to remember what he'd learnt in philosophy and, couldn't quite make a statement as to anything that Buddha may have said like that, and just felt like a complete fool and just, you know. And anyway, next time he met Srila Prabhupada, actually it was in Mayapur, and at this stage he'd actually started chanting Hare Krishna. He was doing a little service while in Mayapur, and he was feeling very submissive, you know, and he was appreciating that maybe if I approach spiritual master, approach Srila Prabhupada, I believe that he can answer my questions. So he's literally fulfilling, you know, all the prerequisites of the Bhagavad Gita. Is it 4? One should approach the spiritual master in a humble state of mind. No. What's that? Chapter 4? Let's have a look. I've got the Bhagavad Gita here. I'll read it. Someone say it? That's it? Yes. So he'd actually, you know, fulfilled all those prerequisites. This time, approaching Srila Prabhupada in that humble mood, Srila Prabhupada actually revealed the absolute truth to him, and therefore we have that book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. See, that was Bob Cohen, who was a Peace Corps worker. So he asked Srila Prabhupada so many questions, and Srila Prabhupada just happily answered all of those questions. A very, very famous book. So, then again, just have a look at my notes. The third time when he met Srila Prabhupada was in Calcutta. And again, he was in a, you know, feeling a little insignificant and feeling quite, in a humble mood in the presence of Srila Prabhupada. And when he approached Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was very happy to see him. And Srila Prabhupada was drinking some coconut juice. And as soon as he walked in, Srila Prabhupada gave him, you know, his own coconut juice to drink. So, you know, he's drinking Srila Prabhupada's coconut juice. So, again, you see, you know, he's describing how when he approached Srila Prabhupada in the right mood, Srila Prabhupada was always very kind. But as soon as there was some mood, even within, that was wrong, Srila Prabhupada would just neglect him. So the fourth time he actually met him, he was in New York, And when he saw Srila Prabhupada, this time he was feeling really humble. And he was thinking, Srila Prabhupada shouldn't really even have to see me. And so he was standing in a hallway, and Srila Prabhupada was coming down from his quarters and going to the temple, and the hallway is packed with devotees, a lot of devotees, and they offered obeisances, and he thought, I'll just stay on the ground and I'll just keep paying my obeisances until Prabhupada's gone, and then he won't see me. But what happened was, of course, that Srila Prabhupada just stopped right in front of him, and he just waited and waited until he got up. And then he said, oh, you're here, like this, and then he grabbed him and embraced him. So the fifth time he was actually on a morning walk in Denver, and now, but of course, now he's drunk Srila Prabhupada's juices, had the Prabhupada's embraced him. He's got some real, that long conversation in Mayapur. So he's actually feeling a bit proud. He's feeling very proud, and he knew it, And they're on the morning walk, and he was thinking, "Oh, Prabhupada would be really happy to see me." One of the devotees said, "Oh, Prabhupada, here's this, Bob Cohen, the Peace Corps worker." And then Prabhupada said, "Oh, that was him." You see how, he hadn't even said anything, but Prabhupada detected, his mood within the heart. So then the sixth time he actually met him was again in New York, and this time again he was feeling very humble. So when he went into the room, there was a lot of big devotees, a lot of big leaders, what have you, and he thought, I'll sit right at the back, and again, a bit of shame, I'll just, Prabhupada, won't even have to see me like this. So Srila Prabhupada was given a darshan, and in the middle of it, then he stopped and he said, "Oh, Bob, come up, come forward, come up here." So, Bob moved up about a foot, and put his head down. Prabhupada said, "No, come here." So he inched forward a little bit more. And then Brahmananda Swami turned around. "Bob, come up here." I did. So he came up, and Prabhupada got him to sit right at his feet, right in front of him. This, and Prabhupada was happy. So then the one of the last times he met Srila Prabhupada was at his initiation, and again, he was a little bit proud. So, again, he's thinking, Srila Prabhupada would be really happy to see me. So, anyway, Srila Prabhupada was actually quite ill and didn't personally perform the initiation ceremony. So, sometimes he would have other devotees, perform that on his behalf. But afterwards, he was sitting on the Vyasasan, and he was handing out cookies. Brahmatirtha now, at this stage, was thinking, now he'll see me, he'll be really happy at this. So he went up very close, and Prabhupada looked at him, and Prabhupada just looked straight through him without looking at him. He could see Prabhupada was looking directly at him, but he was looking through him. Like this. And he felt, again, his ego just completely smashed. So, in this way, he has that realization, of course, that by associating with the devotees of the Lord, especially the pure devotees of the Lord, the super soul reveals himself to that devotee very easily, very quickly. You know, one can perceive the existence, the presence, and the reciprocation of the Supreme Lord acting through his pure devotee. And, you know, therefore, the devotees, they take up that mood of service and they chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, engage the tongue in serving Krishna, and Krishna reveals himself to the devotees through that service, and especially when one serves his pure devotees, and especially if one takes up the service of helping others to become Krishna conscious. Whereas those who follow the path of trying to gain transcendental knowledge or even practice mystic yoga, and they do not take up that service attitude to the Supreme Lord, even though they're striving for that perfection, the super soul actually neglects them. And therefore, that they cannot attain perfection. And as soon as there is the slightest trace of devotional service, even within the jnanis or the yogis, then immediately they get the result of their jnan or their yoga. But for those who actually take up bhakti yoga, just direct service to the Lord without any desire for jnan or mystic yoga, they actually realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Bhagavan feature. So I'll just read the verse again, just to summarize. Text number 6, Krishna is saying, formerly great sages, through the sacrifice of Vedic knowledge and spiritual enlightenment, worship me within themselves, knowing me to be the Supreme Lord of all sacrifice and the super soul in everyone's heart. Thus coming to me, these sages achieve the supreme perfection. Any questions or comments? Everyone satisfied? Last chance. All glory to Prabhupada.